Hello and welcome to NPR's Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week again from the last chance for Sock Hop Wing at Car Talk Plaza.
Last chance for Sock Hop Wing?
No, last chance for Sock Hop. Close quotations. Wing.
Wing.
Of Car Talk Plaza. And the postmark deadline for the Sock Hop contest is June 1st.
And speaking of the Sock Hop, I mean, we're gonna be discussing the Sock Hop contest in a few moments, I'm sure. And when we do, I want to discuss a note I got from Tom Davis 2 years ago. I'm right up to date on my mail. And also, here's a note from Sue Katz who says, when is it correct to use that, and when is it correct to use which? I've heard what I believe were misuses of these words from your lips. Oh, my God.
Oh, geez. Bad enough that we...
Now that you have brought the bring and take controversy under control, how about working on which and that? Sue Katz from St. Louis. I tell you, which and that has been one of the banes of my existence.
Not as bad as bring and take. You've screwed that up every week for 10 years.
Oh, come on.
No, you know how I know which one is which now?
How?
Whatever you say, it's the opposite.
It's the opposite. Well, I'm gonna pay attention now to the witches and the dats. And we will try to bring that under control.
I mean, it's the that's
or we'll try to bring which under
it's the that's of Eastwick?
The that's of Eastwick.
Okay, 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Betty Craig.
Hi, Betty.
From Bloomington,
Betty.
Indiana.
Where?
Bloomington, Indiana.
Bloomington.
Bloomington.
Yeah. So what's up, Betty?
Well, it's beginning to get springtime and warm weather, and I have this 84 Nissan Maxima that... Every time the weather gets warm,
gets bad.
And I drive it for about 20 minutes and turn it off, and if I go back out to get in it again, it keeps dying and dying and dying. And other than that, I love the car. It's been a great car, and I kept taking it back to the dealership, and they said, well, they just couldn't find the problem.
Okay, now let me get this straight. You drive it for 20 minutes.
Huh?
You park for like 10 minutes?
Yes.
You get back in the car, you turn the key, and it goes...
Keeps dying.
But it actually does want to start. So you crank it again, it goes...
Right. And if you sit there and you just gun the heck out of it, you can keep the motor going.
Okay, how long do you have to gun it before it will idle on its
own? Well, let's see, until I get out of the driveway and get up some speed.
Okay. So if you really catch it right with the gas pedal...
Huh?
You can get vroom, throw it in gear and get moving, and it'll actually go.
Right.
But you got to be quick.
Right.
Well, no. My guess is that when you are gunning it, it's running okay when you're revving it up. The only problem is that it won't idle. Is that true?
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so once you get underway with it,
yeah,
it's fine.
Right.
As long as you don't take your foot off the gas.
That's right.
How long do you have to drive it before you can take your foot off the gas?
Oh, probably 3 or 4 blocks.
Okay, so if you were to stop within 3 or 4 blocks, it would stall out again.
Probably. I just never gave it that opportunity.
Sure, why try?
Oh, you got to try everything, Betty.
In the interest of science, right.
Okay, so but after 3 or 4 blocks, it's okay.
It's fine.
Do you notice when you gun it that it blows black smoke out the tailpipe?
No, because I'm sitting in the car. I don't look out.
And you don't look in the mirror. You're concerned with keeping it running.
Right. My observation is when the car is cold and you start it, the motor is revving. It's going fast.
Yeah.
And then that doesn't happen when the car is hot.
Well, it's not supposed to.
Not supposed
right.
to.
Well, it doesn't, so that's what the problem is.
No, that's not the problem.
Oh.
I mean, when it's cold, it's supposed to run fast. It's called fast idle because it's hard to keep an engine running, which is cold. And so it runs a little bit faster for a few minutes and then comes down to the normal curb idle speed.
Right. The fuel injection is designed so that there's a temperature sensor that tells the computer what the temperature of the coolant is.
Right. Okay, if it's too cold, it says rev it up a little bit, otherwise it would stall. When the engine's already warm, it says don't rev it up because you don't need to.
Was the onset of the problem sudden or was it a gradual thing?
I would say from the time I bought the car, it's always been that way.
In 84?
Uh-huh.
Ooh. No kidding.
And we're forgetting the fact that you said, I forgot the fact that you said originally, this only happens in the springtime.
In the summer.
In the summer, with the warm weather.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Mmm. Gee, does this happen if the tank is less than half full?
Wait a minute. This is an 84 Maxima. Is it black?
No.
Oh. What color is it?
Silver gray.
Oh, silver gray.
Oh, you got the silver gray one.
They all do that.
Yeah, the gray ones do that.
Well, now, yeah, that's what the dealer told me.
The first thing I would ask them to do, even though they probably haven't done anything to it, have they?
No.
See, now, they're not going to get any closer to fixing it if they don't do something. That's been proven in the laboratory.
Yeah, this is not a problem which is going to fix itself.
No. I would suggest that
it's not a heal-yourself thing.
No, I would suggest that they start experimenting with things. And the first thing I'd change is probably the coolant temp sensor, because it may be sending the wrong signal to the computer.
Okay.
And that's a relatively inexpensive thing. And tell them you'd like to work with them.
Yeah.
You know, in the solution. I mean, this may be Nobel Prize material here if you can figure this out.
Otherwise, I mean, you've got to make it more painful for him to not fix the problem than to fix it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and tell them you want them to experiment. You'd like them to try things. If they say to you, oh, we can't reproduce the symptom, well, maybe they're not doing it exactly the way you do it.
Well, see, you can do it beautifully because you drive around for 20 minutes, and where do you drive to? Their shop,
right?
And you go in there, it'll take you 10 minutes to explain what's going on. Then you take them out and you say, hey, guys, start my car. They start it and it goes, and it dies and it'll be right there and they'll be able to do things like check to see if the injectors are leaking.
Right.
Call them up and tell them you're on the way over.
Okay.
See you, Betty.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name's Jim.
Hi, Jim.
I'm calling from Potsdam, New York.
Potsdam. Wasn't there a famous treaty signed there?
Well, as a matter of fact, Potsdam is very... You know what Potsdam is famous for? Not Potsdam, New York, of course.
Potsdam, Germany.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who met there?
I have no idea, but yeah, they signed some famous treaty there.
Yeah, Churchill and Stalin and Roosevelt met there near the end of the war.
Did they say, what a coincidence! We should go for coffee. We should do this every year. What's your name?
Jim.
Okay, Jim in Potsdam. What's up?
Okay, I've got a 1984 Pontiac Sunbird. It's got the standard 1.8 four-cylinder in it, and power steering has been giving me trouble. Now, I was under the impression that when something like this went out, that power steering would fail, you know, completely. But I can turn to the right, I just can't turn to the left.
Yeah, this is a safety feature, and that means you have to move to New Jersey. You're in New York now?
Right, no lefts allowed.
See, in New Jersey, there are no left turns off major roads. You have to always take that bottle handle thing, whatever they call it, handle, and only right turns are allowed, and that's it. This is a ploy on the part of the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce to get more people to live in New Jersey.
Are you quite finished?
I wrong?
You can turn to the left, but with difficulty. Right?
Yeah, with much difficulty. And in fact, if I get the wheel cranked around too much, it won't go any further left. Now I know it goes further left because it goes further to the right.
Mm.
But I mean, especially with power steering, I know when the power steering is totally off, you can still force your way through it.
All right, I'm going to try to be subtle about this. Have you been to your sleazeball General Motors dealer yet?
I stay away from them because they're too expensive.
Now wait a minute. Now, does this improve when you've been driving the car for a while?
Yeah, just a bit when it gets warmed up.
Just a bit, huh?
And, you know, for highway driving, it's fine because you don't need to steer much.
Right.
But it never is good, huh?
It never is good.
And it's been like this for a while.
And getting worse.
Right. Worse in cold weather?
Yeah. Mm. And Potsdam, we get plenty of it.
I have no idea. No, it sounds like you need a new rack and pinion. You know, I don't know. You don't like this answer.
Well, this is a 1984, right?
Yeah, and it had a rack and pinion. It used to, at least.
And it's got about 122,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
Is it worth putting that much into?
Well, that's an incredible number of miles for that lousy little car.
No, actually, this is a great little engine.
The engine is a great little engine, but the car was... Well, I mean, maybe the rest of it fell apart. What do I know?
Yeah,
but, I mean, you have...
Mechanics would say sell it while it still runs.
Yeah, you're probably right. It isn't worth spending money on it. On the other hand, it could be dangerous depending on the kind of situation you get into.
For example, if you had to make a quick swerve to the left to avoid a kid on a bicycle or something, you wouldn't be able to do it.
No.
And that's dangerous.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, either fix it or dump the car.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can't sell it. I mean, anyone you sell it to is going to come back and they're going to want to know.
Did I say sell it? I said dump it.
His mechanic said sell it.
Oh, his mechanic. Well, sell it to your mechanic then.
Okay.
Good luck, Jim. But okay. Fix it. Unless you're gonna. If you don't fix it, get rid of it.
Yeah. Take it to El Junco Yard and get rid of it.
Do you think it would be worth more in parts than it would be to?
No.
No.
Who the
heck
wants parts for one of these? The only part that anyone wants for this thing is the power steering unit, and yours doesn't work.
Right. So it's worth negative money.
Okay.
See you later.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Guess what? The Puzzler Answer and more calls are coming up right after this. This message comes from NPR sponsor CarMax and the Love Your Car Guarantee. Car buying can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be that way. CarMax gives you the time you need to make the right choice. Take up to 24 hours for your test drive, and once you buy, enjoy a 30-day money-back guarantee up to 1,500 miles. Learn more and start shopping at CarMax.com, the new Love Your Car Guarantee from CarMax. Car buying reimagined.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/cartalk.
Well, talking about semis,
yeah,
I have a semi-answer to this puzzler that we gave last week. Remember the,
that stupid puzzler. Come on. Yeah. All right. You have an answer?
Well, my biggest disappointment was that Doug Berman got the answer to it. I thought it was a good puzzle,
if
actually.
If Doug gets the answer, then it's clear that it was not a very challenging puzzler.
Well, here it is in a nutshell. You have a nutshell. You know, you have a sphere, like an orange. Imagine, if you would, an orange, okay? And you're going to drill a hole through that sphere like you would core an apple, except it isn't an apple. It's what?
It's an orange.
But imagine
I know what difference.
Imagine it had a core. You wanted to remove this, okay?
Yeah.
And your corer is exactly 6 inches long, okay? So it can drill no more or no less than 6 inches. Okay? So if you must core through the sphere, right through the middle, okay, with the 6-inch core, so you must remove a piece that is 6 inches. Now, if you look at that piece, it's going to look a little peculiar. It's going to look like a cylinder with a little bubble on either end, right?
Yeah.
Okay?
That's correct.
But it must be 6 inches long.
From where to where?
From the end of the core, from the cutting end of the core to the top. In other words, imagine if you were the core is a cylinder, a thin walled cylinder. Of wall thickness zero.
Okay, my confusion with this puzzler, and I'm sure many of our listeners had the same confusion.
You know, he got confused the part that said the sphere. Lost.
Orange, when you started saying orange. My question is, where do you measure the 6 inches? Is it from peak to peak?
Well, I'm going to.
Or is it, you said it's a cylinder with a couple of little caps on it.
That's right.
Well, is it the height of the cylinder, or is it?
It's the height of the cylinder because the core is a cylinder.
That's right.
And it is exactly 6 inches long. Okay. Imagine if it were a drill bit, exactly 6 inches long.
Got it.
No, you don't. What's the answer then?
I don't have the answer. I don't know what the answer is.
The question. You don't even know the question.
What was the question?
The question is, how much of the sphere's material is left after you core it?
No, I figured out the answer only on the... not even understanding the question, I figured out the answer. Remember? Because of what was missing from the answer. I said, since you did not specify the size of the sphere, then it must not make any difference. Therefore, I can make the sphere be any size I want it to be.
That's right.
And I chose to make it...
No, 6 inches.
Six
what?
6 inches.
In diameter.
In diameter.
That's exactly right. Because we didn't specify what the diameter of the core was to be, we used limit theory.
Yes.
Okay. And if it
this
weren't
is
for
similar
that.
Similar to speed limits.
Yes. If it weren't for that, I would have no idea how to figure this out. Because if you use limit theory and you shrink the diameter of the core down to zero.
That's what I did.
Okay.
I said, what if this core were in fact a needle?
Exactly.
Of diameter zilcho.
Right.
Which is a technical term for very small.
Right. Zilcho. Yes, so, I've
that's scientific
with that.
Notation, too.
Right.
Zilcho. Right. Hoppo, Groucho, and Zilcho.
Then the answer becomes 4/3 pi r cubed, with r being 3.
Yeah.
And the answer becomes 36 units, whatever.
Six inches long.
Cubic inches. That's right. I said inches.
Yeah.
And that's the answer.
4/3 pi r cubed, and you make r be whatever the heck you want it to be. In this case, limit theory says it ought to be 3. And
yeah.
It works.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Do we have
a
winner?
So even though I didn't understand your question.
And you don't like the question.
And I don't like the question. I think it's a stupid question. I got the answer right anyway. Doesn't that tell you something?
Yeah.
You talk about luck, huh?
It's a lousy puzzler. Both my brother and Dougie got it.
The ability to solve puzzles without even understanding what they mean. And the winner this week is Bill Shad of Evans City, Pennsylvania. And in exchange for the embarrassment of having all of his friends and neighbors know that he listens to this stupid show, he will get an autographed copy of our new book, 18 Years in the Making, called what? Car Talk. It will be mailed, of course, in a plain brown wrapper. And good luck to you, Bill. If you don't like the book, send it back. We'll send you a T-shirt.
Oh, he doesn't send the book back? No. I thought he just read it and sent it back.
Right. We got a new puzzler, hopefully better than this one, coming up in a little while.
Yeah.
So
you'll see.
Hang in there.
1-800-332-9287.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yeah, hi. This is Donna from Philadelphia.
Donna?
Yes.
Donna?
Yes.
Hi, Donna.
How you doing?
Hello. What's up?
Well, I'm calling about my 82 Datsun 310. And
you don't have a Camaro?
No, I don't have a Camaro.
Oh,
would you like a Camaro?
It's your little economy car, you know?
A little economy car, yeah.
A little Datsun, okay.
That's what we have in Massachusetts here, a little economy.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Okay, well, I just had the head gasket replaced. Uh-huh. And 2 weeks after having the head gasket replaced, I started having real problems with my oil. I'm, like, going through, like, a quart of oil every 200 miles or so. And I wanted to know whether maybe something happened when I got the head gasket replaced that, or my mechanic thinks my rings have gone now.
Oh. When he did the head gasket, did he also have the cylinder head rebuilt?
I don't think so. I think he just put a new gasket on.
How much did he charge?
About $400.
$400. He must have. Maybe he had the head machined.
Maybe.
But he did not do the valves, to your knowledge.
Not to my knowledge.
How many miles on this Datsun?
About 82,000.
82,000. Why does he think the rings are gone?
Well, I took it back to him because I said, you know, the oil. It was a problem with the oil, and he did all sorts of tests, compression tests, and all this kind of stuff, and he can't seem to figure out where the oil's going, so he says the last resort is it's the rings.
Well,
Yeah, that's what I said.
I mean, don't forget, he's got a vested interest in giving you the most esoteric answer possible.
Yes.
Right? Because that will tell you that he had nothing to do with this.
Exactly.
Except the likelihood of your sudden, and I presume it is sudden, consumption of a quart of oil every 200 miles being absolutely correlated exactly with his doing the head gasket seems like it unlikely to be due just to chance, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Thomas, you're about to incur the wrath of every boat owner in America.
Do only mechanics own boats?
No. You must have been burning some oil before, Donna.
Wait a minute.
Not that I noticed it.
How many...
Are you questioning the veracity of the witness?
I'm about to badger the witness. How many miles have
as
you had...
As long as you don't raccoon her.
How many miles have you had this car?
Had it since new.
Yeah, right. Since it was brand new.
You had it since it was new.
Yes.
And you've never had to add oil in all these years, have you, Ms. Donna?
Oh, yes. I add oil every now and then, but never.
What's every now and then?
Well, I can't really pinpoint it down for you.
But how did you suddenly notice that every 200 miles now you're using a quart?
Oh, well, what happened after 2 weeks after I got it back, we were driving up and back to the Poconos from Philadelphia, so that was a 200-mile road trip.
Well, let me. I have the answer because, and I'll tell you why your mechanic is free of blame.
Okay.
All right. And you will. And you will go. First of all, you'll be. You will,
hat in hand.
You'll go and kiss his shoes. You'll be. What happened to this car between the time it burned no oil and between and now is something very important. You blew the head gasket and you overheated it. Didn't you?
No.
Didn't you, Donna?
No, I didn't.
Well, why did you need a head gasket?
I object. Counsel is badgering.
It was blowing a lot of smoke, a lot of white smoke.
What happened in that time is that antifreeze was getting into the cylinders.
Right.
Okay. And you probably were overheating it because I'm sure there were a few times when you ran out of coolant because that white smoke was due to the fact that you were pouring coolant into the cylinders, one or more of the cylinders.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever run out of coolant?
No. I mean, I would check it, and it was never really down really low.
No, it had to have gone down. If over a period of months you were pouring white smoke out the back, you must have been losing coolant enough to make the engine run hot.
Right.
And enough to wear out the rings or score the cylinders or do something,
mm-hmm.
which precipitated this rapid oil consumption. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're burning oil. Nothing. He didn't do anything wrong except to not inform you that there was a likelihood that the repair could be accompanied by increased oil consumption.
Right. The only thing he could have actually done wrong, and I don't think this is true, but it ought to be checked, is if he didn't put everything back together correctly, you could be leaking the oil.
Well, that's what I thought, but he said he checked it, and it's...
No, if there were a leak, he would have found it.
He's
it would have
convinced
been, it would have
not
been
leaking.
In his best interest to find it if
right.
there were a leak. He found no leak because you melted the engine or partially melted it while you were driving it with the blown head gasket. You should never have been driving it with a blown head gasket for months.
Right. I mean, the fact that it was continuing to blow white smoke should mm-hmm. have been... Even though you didn't know it then, but you know it now, if that ever happens again, you should not drive around blowing white smoke, because that white smoke is not coming from nowhere.
Right.
It's coming from the coolant in the radiator.
Now, how many times have you had to add oil?
Well, like I said, we were doing every weekend, we're going to the Poconos, we had to add a half a quart up and a half a quart back, so that was 200 miles, approximately a quart. Now, I haven't been driving it for like the last couple of weeks, so...
And I gather you've made this Poconos trip before and checked the oil and it was never down?
Oh, yeah.
Do you get the room with the heart-shaped bed when you go to those?
No.
No?
No.
I've always wanted it.
Well, she hasn't got it yet, but don't forget, they go back every weekend. Hey, good luck, Donna.
Thank you.
Don't worry about it.
Try using 20W50 oil for the summer. That might help quite a bit.
20 what?
20W50.
Okay.
Instead of the 10W30 that you're probably using now.
Right.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And if that doesn't work,
bye-bye.
Try molasses.
Try the new Sentry. You'll love it.
Good luck, Donna.
Thank you.
Meet Bye. You in the Poconos.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back with more calls and the new Puzzler after these messages. Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from TracFone Wireless, offering unlimited talk and text smartphone plans for as low as $20 a month with no contract. And with unlimited carryover data, you can keep what you don't use. All these benefits for a phone on America's largest and most dependable networks. Get high-quality smartphones at a great price. Learn more at TracFone.com. That's TracFone.com. TracFone Wireless. Now you're in control.
We're back. This is NPR's Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to answer your questions about cars and car repair and ever popular skeet husbandry.
I mean, is this a joke or what? I have here the actual sticker from a Jeep Wrangler Renegade, and the total price. I mean, do you believe this?
Now, you're going to explain that the cheap
Renegade is not cheap.
It's some kind of a Freudian slip.
Right. The Jeep Renegade is their most wonderful, lousy vehicle.
Well,
I mean, it's not up in the Cherokee class.
No,
right?
No. It's a Wrangler. It's a CJ.
It's a CJ7, a little cheap little thing.
But they uncheapened it a little bit.
They uncheapened it. And this thing costs $19,268.
Yeah, but that's just the asking price. I mean, you can probably whittle them down to about $18,800.
I mean, who in his right mind would spend $19,000 for this vehicle? I mean, are you serious?
You know why people buy these things? And
you drove this for quite a while. How are your kidneys?
No, people buy these because they're fun and they're cute.
I have to say that I had a great time driving it.
And that's why...
You know what I like best about it? The little sign inside the vehicle that says, the doors and roof of this vehicle have been designed to protect you from the weather only.
Hey, it's a big improvement over the last year's model, which didn't even do that.
Didn't even do that.
Well, look, here's the new Puzzler.
New Puzzler, yeah. I hope it's better than the Apple Core. Come on.
No, this is a non-mathematical puzzler. In fact, I'm not so sure what field of endeavor this comes into.
And if you've never listened to the show before, by the way, this is an opportunity for you to win wonderful prizes. If you think you know the answer.
It used to be an opportunity to win wonderful prizes. Now we give away our book.
Oh, now we give away our book.
Yeah, but anyway, here it is.
It's a million seller, you know.
You're driving in your car. See, that sounds like a pointer system. You're driving in your car.
No, it sounds like a...
You're driving in your car, and you drive by things like telephone poles.
Oh.
Okay?
Mm.
And you hear... Well, not maybe the way...
My dog. Backseat.
Panting.
Coughing on a choking on a chicken bone.
Well, you don't need... Telephone poles usually space much further apart, so you hear... If you're my brother driving, you hear... Vroom. Wait a minute, I thought that was a little bit too soon.
A little bit too fast there.
Here's the question. What are you hearing when you drive by a telephone pole or some other regularly or irregularly spaced things
tree,
on the side
whatever.
Of the...
You hear this noise. What is it?
It's the hum from the transformers on
radiation.
The top of the... Yeah, something, I think so. Yeah. Well, if you think you know the answer...
This is not simple, by the way. Even though this is a non-mathematical and somewhat non-automotive, only vaguely related to automotives, I think it's an awesome puzzler. Compared to the Apple Core,
If you were coasting by on your bicycle...
Would you also hear it? Mm. You might want to try that. Don't give any hints. Come on, we only got 6 or 7 books left.
If you think you know the answer, send it to us at Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, WBUR, 630 Commonwealth Ave.
Our Fair City. Was I too quick?
Boston.
Our Fair City.
Massachusetts, 02215. Got it?
Yeah.
Well, hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Martha, and I'm calling from Tazewell, Virginia. I've got a 1985 Subaru GL station wagon that we bought new when we lived in Houston, Texas. Mm. And I'm one of these Subaru owners who loves it so much, and the thing's really taken a lot of abuse.
Did your husband get elected to the U.S. Senate or something? Is that why you moved from Texas to...
No, this is the area that we're from. My husband wanted to come back to the mountains.
Ah.
It was too hot.
Too hot in Texas.
Yeah, real hot.
It is.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's got 113,000 miles on it now, and it's got to last a good bit longer. We just had to buy my husband a new car late last year, and so I've got to make this last for a while, and I'd like to have another Subaru, but just can't afford it. And what I'm wondering is, would this be a car to consider having the engine overhauled? It's starting to make a lot of little noises, which, you know, my mechanic says, well, it's got 113,000 miles on it. It doesn't sound bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him about overhauling it, and he kind of, you know, shrugged. And this guy's real good with Subarus. And he says, well, you know, it's got a lot of rust. It's got 113,000 miles. I wouldn't waste my money.
I guess it would be sort of like if you were like 112 years old and you went to a cosmetic surgeon to get like a nose job. He would have trouble taking it seriously because, you know, don't waste your time, lady. So, I mean, I suppose that's the attitude your mechanic is taking.
Yeah.
It's not entirely unjustified.
He's trying to let you down gently, Martha. He's trying to explain to you gently that you have a jalopy.
I love my car.
Why get the engine? You know, I think most people don't understand. It's like when people get old. I'll use this analogy. I mean, we used to have Dad come over and shovel the driveway all the time for us, you know. And now he's in his 80s. He doesn't
do yours anymore. Does mine.
You have to understand the car's limitations. So it may be an old car, but if you want to make it like new again, it's going to cost you thousands, and you'll still never have a car that's new because there are many, many pieces you're never going to replace. And rebuilding the engine is only one little piece of rebuilding the whole car.
Big piece.
No, it isn't a big... It's one big piece, but it's only one of many pieces.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, having the engine work correctly doesn't mean that the fuel pump's going to work correctly, or the starter motor, or the alternator, or the transmission, or the constant velocity joints, this or that.
But so what?
What I'm saying is, this is not the kind of car you can get into and drive 100 miles a day in anymore.
Well,
just like Dad can't shovel both our driveways anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, as long as he does mine, I don't care what the hell happens
to yours. So
you
have to relegate this car to in-town service.
Well, that's who says that's not what Martha does with the car?
I'm going to ask her that.
Well, I drive it a lot.
Not anymore.
What's a lot? I mean, how many miles a day typically do you drive?
Well, let's see. I can't tell you. There's really no average per day, but I'd say probably about 300, 350 miles a week.
I would say that average is something like 70 miles a day.
Yeah, something like that.
Or 50, depending on how many days. That's a fair amount of driving.
Yeah, I know. That's why it's got 113,000 miles on it.
Yeah, no, that is a fair amount of driving. And if you need reliability so you don't break down in the middle of the road someplace, I mean, that means in some cases you're 30, 40 miles away from home.
Does this mean that I'm doomed to a Ford Escort?
Oh, my God, Martha. No, you don't deserve a Ford Escort.
I know.
You're too nice a woman.
That's what killed my husband's car. That's what my husband...
What did we get him?
Oh, he had a Ford Escort.
What did he get new, though?
He's got a Nissan Sentra.
Oh, sure.
And he got the new car because I got the Subaru when it was new.
Sure, so he gets a new Sentra, and you're stuck with this 10-year-old
Yeah,
piece
but
of,
you guys... You
know, no, it's a great car.
No, you guys didn't plan it right.
There's nothing wrong with it. It hasn't cost us an arm and a leg, you know, but...
Sure.
We probably really have not taken as good a care of it as we should have. Yeah.
Well, no, you did fine. If you go to 113,000, you did great.
Well, how many more miles would you guess that I could put on this car?
About 8.
Yeah.
Thanks.
No,
well, does your husband do a lot of driving too?
Yes, we both drive 35 miles one way to work. Now I only work 3 days a week, but he works 5.
Yeah.
Where do you work? I mean, why can you move?
Well,
let's see.
Only if we want to live in a neighboring state, which we don't really care for.
Okay.
We live in one state, we work in the other, but you know we're kind of close.
Oh,
to the border.
I see. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you choose to do that, then you end up having to spend your money on cars, which is unfortunate. And if you drive 35 miles a day to work, then you should not be driving a car with 113K on it.
Are you serious?
No, mm-hmm. I'm serious. And if anything, your husband should be driving that car. Come on, where is that bum?
Especially since I work at night, right?
You work at night, too?
Yeah.
Oh, under no circumstances. Come on, it is unconscionable of your husband to be driving this brand-new Sentra. Tell him to drive, just because you bought the Subaru new. This is not a
you-me
situation.
You guys, he won't listen to me.
This is a situation of we. This is a marriage, right?
Right.
What's important is whose safety is more important. Who's got more life insurance? Probably him.
No, I do, actually.
You drive the old heap, then.
Oh, you have the big bucks?
Well, I keep telling the guy if he's really smart, he'll get me knocked off.
Well, that's what he's trying to do.
He must love me or something.
Have you noticed a couple of times when the lug nuts have been loose on the car?
Oh, God. Well, the only time I've had it break down on me was when I hate to admit this, I lost my timing belt.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay.
Now, I mean, far be it from me ever to tell someone to go out and spend money on a new car.
So it would cost, like, a whole lot of money to like, rebuild the engine.
Well, I'm not even sure you need an engine rebuild. I mean, let it make noise.
You might not need an engine rebuild, but you've got a car that's got a lot of miles on it, and you're doing too much driving for that car. I mean, if that car were a car that was used around town, I'd say keep it forever.
Here's what you do. I'm going to break with tradition here and recommend you do something that I would never do myself, but I'd like to see, in the interest of science, someone else do it.
Yeah.
You are perfectly willing right now to spend about $2,000 to rebuild the engine. If the mechanic said that's the price, you would do it.
If he can assure me that it would be, that
well,
was my other question.
Don't
is
touch
it,
the engine.
Is it worth it?
The engine is unlikely to break down to the extent that it won't get you home tonight. Instead, take the $2,000, replace the alternator, the starter, the fuel pump, and all the other pieces that you would not ordinarily replace.
Okay,
because those are the things that are apt to leave you broken down, the water pump.
Yeah,
that's right.
I just had a new water pump.
Well, I'll put another one in. You know, but those are the kinds of things that are going to cause a breakdown.
Right, that's what causes unreliability in a car,
right.
All the other little stuff.
I mean, you're unlikely to come out of work some night at 11 o'clock and turn the key and have it not start because the engine died.
Okay.
When the engine dies, it's either going to blow up, and you'll know it, or it's going to just give up the ghost by gradually burning a lot more oil or making awful rapping noises or having no oil pressure. But you'll get home in all likelihood.
Okay.
But if the starter motor goes, you won't get home. If the alternator goes, you won't get home. So spend the money and have all those things replaced.
Spend the money on increasing the reliability. That's the most important thing if you drive that far.
Okay.
So and ask your mechanic to replace all that stuff, all the hoses, all the little diddly things that
and
could break down.
And then a week after you do all that, the motor will seize. And then you spend the $2,000 and do the motor. And for $4,000, you'll have a Subaru with 100,000 odd miles on it.
Yeah, but it'll be pretty reliable.
Okay.
I know. That's exactly what you wanted to hear.
That was exactly what I wanted to hear.
I know.
Anything rather than an Escort, right?
Anything but an Escort. Well, yeah, a new Subaru.
Hey, it could be worse than an Escort. It could be a Festiva.
I had a Fiat once.
Even some doozies.
No wonder you like the Subaru.
He doesn't want to give it up either.
Hey, Martha, good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks
Bye.
For your call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, another hour of NPR's Car Talk has mercifully come to an end. Our producer is Doug Berman. Our assistant producer is Dawn Jennings. Our engineer is Jennifer Loeb. Our dean of the Department of Auto Musicology is Ken Rogers. Our technical advisor is John Willingsworth Lawler. Everything else here and all the heavy work is done by the former Miss America, Stephanie Kuhl.
And come on, pick up all those batons, will you?
Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research.
Upholsterer.
It's a typo here. The manager of the Tappet Brothers Capital Depreciation Fund, even though he is in prison, is Les Ismore. Our staff composer is Bela Kartok. Our chief correspondent is Walter Windshield. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Thanks for listening. Wear your seatbelt. Don't drive like a knucklehead or like my brother. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye. This is NPR, National Public Radio.